Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyadi Shakarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhaktavinoda Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudirayat. Nashta Prayeshu Apadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, whose praise with transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. So, today we are reading in the 12th canto, topics of 12th canto, 11th chapter, topics of Srimad Bhagavatam summarized. Sorry, 12th chapter, 12. And we're doing shloka 27 today, so it's just one shloka. So we'll do it responsibly. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagarishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagarishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagarishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagarishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagadishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Yatra Vatirno Bhagavan. Krishnakyo Jagadishwaraha. Vasudeva Grihe Janma. Tato Vridishcha Gokule. Synonyms: Yatra, in which dynasty? Avatirna, descended. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna Akya, known as Krishna. Jagat Ishwaraha, Lord of the Universe. Vasudeva Grihe, in the home of Vasudev. Janma, his birth. Tata, subsequently. Vritti, his growing up. Cha, and Gokule, in Gokula. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. How Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Lord of the Universe, descended into this Yadu dynasty. How he took birth in the home of Vasudeva and how he then grew up in Gokula. All this is described in detail. I'll just read it one more time. How Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Lord of the Universe, descended into the Yadu dynasty. How he took birth in the home of Vasudeva and how he then grew up in Gokula. All this is described in detail. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. I want to seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas and especially the senior Vaishnavas. I hope that I can say something of use today, which will bring us a little bit closer to Krishna for today. And I want to give special thanks to two senior Vaishnavas that I consult whenever I have some points of clarification, which is Pushkar Prabhu and Sukada Prabhu. So I want to give them acknowledgement. So I wanted to focus the class on the part of the shloka today that talks about Krishna's descent. So I wanted to focus the class on Krishna's descent. So we know in Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, in the seventh verse, we know Krishna says why he appears millennium after millennium. So whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So it's Bhagavad Gita 4.7. So whenever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. So when Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty, that was one of the reasons. That was at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga, the 28th Chatur Yuga of the 7th Manu, which is our current Manu and our current Chatur Yuga. Does anyone know the name of our Manu? Vaivasvata, thank you, Kishan. So at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga, we all know this from the 10th canto, the earth had become overburdened with demoniac kings when their military might, and there was a lot of unnecessary killing taking place. So like we heard in the previous shloka, there was a rise of irreligion. So a lot of killing was taking place, and Mother Bhumi, who is the predominating deity of our planet, she became very sad and overburdened by this phenomenon. She was being trampled upon. So she took the shape of a cow, and she sought the help of the Lord of our universe, which is Lord Brahma. And I guess there's a special provision where each presiding deity of each planet within our universe, if there's some problem, they can go to Lord Brahma, who is ruling over the entire universe, and they can report a grievance. So she went to Lord Brahma, she took the shape of a cow, and Lord Brahma went to talk to Vishnu about the disturbance. So the Vishnu that he approaches is Kshiradakshai Vishnu, and he is lying on the Kshira ocean of milk, and this is on a planet within this universe called Shweta Dweep. So Kshiradakshay Vishnu resides in Shweta Dweep within this planet. And this is not to be confused with Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He's the one who's lying at the bottom of the universe, on the universal ocean, and it's out of Garbhadakshay's Vishnu that the navel came out of, the lotus stem came out of his navel, and on which Brahma was born. So that's Garbhadakshay Vishnu. This is Kshiradakshay Vishnu. He resides in Shweta Dweep, and he is lying on an ocean of milk. And through this Vishnu, all the incarnations within our universe come through this Kshiradakshay Vishnu. So Brahma, they recited the Purusha Shukta, which is the particular prayer which the demigods use to invoke Vishnu, Kshiradakshay Vishnu. And Vishnu responded, and only he could understand the message that was, Brahma could only understand the message given by Vishnu, because Vishnu transmitted the message through the heart of Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma had to broadcast it to all the other demigods that were present there. And basically Vishnu said that I will appear on this earth very soon to deal with this rise of religion and all this unnecessary killing, along with my supreme powerful potencies. And as long as he remained on this earth to execute the mission of annihilating the demons and establishing the devotees and reestablishing religion, the demigods should also take birth in pious families. They should all immediately take birth in a family of the Yadu dynasty, wherein the Lord would also appear in due course of time. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, would himself personally appear as the son of Vasudeva. And before his appearance, all the demigods, along with their wives, should also appear in different pious families in the world just to assist the Lord in executing his mission. So this is how Krishna came to appear within the Yadu dynasty, because there was a predominance of irreligion, and Mother Bhumi was distressed, and she had to report this problem. And Krishna, out of his kindness, agreed to appear in the Yadu dynasty. So, Bhagavad Gita 4.7 said that whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. And then the next shloka says, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So this dharma samstapanartaya is to re-establish the principles of religion. In the purport it says, the Lord appears on schedule at the end of the Dwapara Yuga of the 28th Chatur Yuga of the 7th Manu. That's what we're in following Kali Yuga of that. In one day of Lord Brahma. So to clarify, he appears as Krishna in one day of Lord Brahma. In other millenniums, he takes other forms. And so Lord Chaitanya appears in that following Kali Yuga, and that's our Yuga, that's for us. He therefore appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. In the Bhagavatam, it is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. The Vedic principles push one towards complete surrender unto him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. So we heard from the 10th canto that at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga, there was a predominance of demoniac kings, and they had a lot of military might, and so there was unnecessary killing taking place on earth. So that was the predominance of irreligion at that time. And I wanted to touch upon what bring it sort of closer to us, like what is the predominance of irreligion within our age for which Lord Chaitanya appears? And before we get into that, I wanted to just ask and maybe just have like a few minute discussion about why adherence to Vedic principles is important. Can anyone say? Krishna established his principles and we are to adhere to them. And why is it important that we do that? If anybody would like to say. So one reason is to avoid sin, and that keeps us from degradation. So in terms of our current age, I would say the sinful activities and the degradation have come already pretty far. In the 12th canto, second chapter, which describes the symptoms of Kali Yuga, it is said, Shukadeva Goswami said, then, O King, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of the age of Kali. So religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of the age of Kali. During the present age, Kali Yuga, practically all desirable qualities will gradually diminish. For example, dharma, which indicates a respect for higher authority that leads one to obey religious principles, will diminish. Thus, bereft of systematic Vedic theology, material science has moved into the destructive realm of gross materialism, while speculative Western philosophy has drifted into superficiality of relativistic ethics and inconclusive linguistic analysis. With so many of the best Western minds dedicated to materialistic analysis, naturally, much of Western religious life, separated from the intellectual mainstream, is dominated by irrational fanaticism and unauthorized mystic and mystery cults. People have become so ignorant of the science of God that they often lump the Krishna consciousness movement in with the odd assortment of fanciful attempts at theology and religion. Thus, dharma, or true religion, which is strict and conscious obedience to God's law, is diminishing. So what to say at the end of the last Dwapara Yuga? Now, in our current age, it's become much worse. So I wanted to discuss a little bit about irreligion in our current age and how it's promulgated. And I wanted to suggest that the demons in our current age, one of the methods that irreligiosity is promulgated is through the use of media. And I don't mean to suggest that I think media is bad. And on the other hand, I think media is very good and it can be used for very positive means. And it, you know, it's amazing technological invention. But I do want to suggest that media has been used as a major and effective means of causing irreligion within our current age. So some positive examples of media, we can say even within our movement, but not necessarily just restricted to Krishna consciousness movement. About 20 years ago, that Abhay Charan series came out, which was such an amazing series about the life of Srila Prabhupada, which was put together by Bhakti Charu Swami and his devotees, which was just totally amazing. And for me, watching that really gave me a deeper appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's life, and it really like deepened my devotion towards him. So that's like one positive example of the use of media to help with Krishna consciousness. And then more recently, we had Yadubar and Vishakha Prabhu's and their team, the Hare Krishna film. We can see Facebook has been used effectively for preaching. YouTube has been used for preaching. So these are all very powerful means to use media in a positive way. But I do want to talk about a little bit how the demons, because we're talking about irreligiosity and how Krishna descends whenever there's irreligiosity. So I wanted to bring it to our current scope. How the demons have used media to spread irreligiosity. If you think about how easy it is to put irreligious images into our minds, like using media, especially like visual media. And then I wanted to suggest that also I believe it's sort of like underhanded, and it's a subterfuge because they try to pawn it off as entertainment and comedy. And you know, I mean, I'm a victim of that too. You know, it's not like they'll just present shows or films that are like downright irreligious. You know, it's all cloaked in entertainment. It's all cloaked in you're learning something along the way. You know, you're learning maybe some like nice historical film or, you know, something useful even. But I've noticed that a lot of these comedies, which, you know, these comedies have become like very prevalent today. They are like a really effective means of promulgating irreligiosity because you get kind of duped, because while you're being entertained and while you're laughing, you're being exposed to like a lot of irreligiosity. So I thought how it's sort of like, it's very underhanded, and it's like a subterfuge. I just want to give an example of the series like Seinfeld. You know, we all, I thought it was like so funny, you know, and like 20 years ago. I mean, it was like really well written and clever, and it is like really funny, but if you analyze it, and I've analyzed it recently, there is so much irreligiosity like put forward in shows like that, and you know, shows like Friends, which was so popular, and you know, which is like so funny, but while you're being entertained and amused and while you're laughing, you're being exposed to a lot of irreligiosity. So I thought, like, what an effective means to really like put irreligiosity into the world and into our minds, isn't it? It's like so clever. Does anybody want to comment on this phenomenon of us being entertained, and while we're entertained, we're being exposed to a lot of irreligiosity? Would anybody like to comment?
You know, the logical principle is, you know, try to avoid association and non-employees because they're not interested in devotional service. So, I mean, you know, you can get obsessed about the TV and this and that, but basically you're just non-devotees talking to other non-devotees. So if you're associated with non-devotees, you're going to get absorbed in things that don't have to do with devotional service. So, you know, these guys don't. Trying to sell stuff. It's a capitalist endeavor. It's a, you know, they're trying to get people to watch it so they'll, you know, can pay for advertising. So maybe it's part of some grand conspiracy or something to be the devil. But I mean, basically, material facilitates people to do that. You know, and as voting, we want to associate with people who are interested in devotional service, and if people on the TV aren't interested in that, then we don't want to associate with them.
Absolutely. We as devotees, practicing devotees, we absolutely have to restrict our association with that. Well, that was definitely one of my points, but I am kind of talking about a broader topic of irreligiosity within our age, and we do want to have the mood of being aware of what's out there. You know, yeah, we have to limit our exposure to that, but the people out there are being exposed to that, you know, regularly, and it makes it very hard for them to take up Krishna consciousness, isn't it so? Because they have the shelter. It's like a false shelter of this media and this entertainment, you know, and they're quite like content in that. And, you know, especially in America, I mean, all over the world now, but in America, it's been more so, it's been going on longer, but you know, they take shelter of that. I don't want to speak for us as practicing devotees, but they are taking shelter of that entertainment and that media, and they are like very addicted. And, you know, it's sort of troubling for us because it's like we need to, you know, how do you promulgate Krishna consciousness within that kind of sinful environment, or being the irreligious environment, which has become like very normalized, isn't it? Like, that's the problem. It's become very normal. Like, what you see on Seinfeld and Friends, like, that is normal life for most people who aren't devotees. Like, that's just normal life. It's really not so sinful. It's not a big deal. It's just normal life. You know, but that's what I was saying. It's how it's, like, underhanded, how it's being pawned off as entertainment. And it is, like, very clever and, like, well-written and all that, but they are being exposed to, I would say they, not us. Hopefully we're not watching that too much. They are being exposed to like irreligious images. I randomly happened to watch this TV, this film that was made for high school students today, just as sort of like research. And I was just amazed at how much irreligion was being shown there, you know, geared towards like teenagers, like much worse than like 20 years ago. I mean, it was all cloaked in comedy, you know, it was all, I mean, it was like so, it was like slapstick and funny and, you know, but it was very, very irreligious. Like all four illicit principles were being like shown there. So I wanted to say that, you know, by using this media and this entertainment, like God has been taken out of the picture. And why? Why has God been taken out of the picture? Would anybody like to say? Yes, true.
The mere idea that technology has become so prominent now. In ancient time, people didn't care for technology because they know the purpose of life was to go back to God that once one reaches. But now, this is a sign of degradation. And
yes.
Technology is becoming so prominent now, you know, I mean, you have a phone, you have computers.
Exactly,
you
have, right.
You know, mm-hmm. So people's energy is just get invested in these
things,
you see? And so it is distracting us.
Exactly. That's exactly the point I was trying to make, part of the point.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the point of the media is disrupting the world.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes.
You know, but I mean, if we can find some way to at least preach through the media.
Exactly. We can dovetail the media a little bit for our purposes, but there's also this brainwashing phenomenon taking place out there, which makes it hard for people to focus on Vedic principles and religious life, isn't it? If you don't have those distractions, it's sort of easier to do that, isn't it? So I wanted to suggest that by not adhering to Vedic principles, we become degraded by these irreligious images and sinful activities, and by unrestricted sense gratification. So this is all degrading to the human being, and this degradation makes us dull. It opens us to being more easily controlled and dull, and like you said, distracted. So, you know, I think it's just like a very big sort of problem out there. And I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's somewhere in the Bhagavatam. If somebody can say, that would be great, how technology came from the lower planets. Does anybody know about that? It comes from the lower planets. Anyway, I don't have the backup on that, so I'm not going to go into that too much. But sort of to practice Krishna consciousness, we just need a very sort of wholesome and basic life, and then our minds can be clear in order to practice nicely. And this media really helps to distract us and make our minds not clear. And if you also notice how media is like very accessible, and I wanted to suggest that this accessibility of media is part of the mass indoctrination into irreligion. And I just want to share two examples from history of how media is powerful and how it can be used for destructive purposes before we go on. So in the 1930s, radio was becoming very popular, and you know, I guess it just become invented not too long before that. So in the 1930s, it was becoming very popular and everybody wanted one, but at that time, it was still very expensive, so not everybody could afford one. Well, the Nazi regime in Germany in 1933, Hitler had just come to power, and the Nazis and his propaganda department, headed by Goebbels, they saw the radio as a very effective means to reach the masses so that they could expose, you know, Hitler's speeches and his messages, which he was broadcasting, you know, daily, They saw the radio as a very effective means to bring those speeches and bring their Nazi agenda into the daily lives of all the German citizens. So they made a very cheap version of the radio, and they sold it very cheaply. And so that everybody, all the German people, all the poor people could afford one, and they also distributed them like for free to some places. So, you know, so this is one example of how media is used to, you know, for destructive means, because it is such a powerful weapon. And this is from a history newsletter, how Ellison Meyer writes, a 1936 poster depicts a seemingly infinite crowd congregating around an oversized, it was called a people's radio, a people's receiver, a Volksempfänger, a people's radio with text declaring, so an infinite crowd congregating around a giant picture of this radio with text declaring, all Germany hears the Führer with the people's radio. And another example is the, you know, the supposed moon landing, and we don't have to get into whether that was staged or not, but roughly 600 million people, a fifth of the world's population, tuned in to the quote-unquote moon landing. And this record was only surpassed in 1981, when more people than that watched Lady Diana Spencer marry Prince Charles. Does anybody want to comment on that? I have a few more points to make. Yes, go ahead.
You know, the radio was already very popular in the U.S. Maybe for, you know, facilitated, what does this have to do with Bhagavatam? But maybe you facilitated cheap radios, you facilitated cheap cars. That's where the Volkswagen Beetle came from. You know, and he took advantage of it. But the radio was already very popular, and I know in America, everybody had one.
Well, I was talking about Germany, and not everybody had one in the 1930s, and my point was about the use of media to spread irreligiosity.
Yeah,
so,
of course the demons are going to use the material world to spread their worldview. It's a given.
Okay, so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the spread of irreligiosity in our current age, and that is just one example.
Okay, I'm off the
chain. I'm talking about the general public. I'm not talking about devotees who don't associate with these media so much necessarily. I mean, some do, but I'm talking about the general mood of our age and climate of our age. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, before modern media, let's say in the 1800s in India, there were very many religious people, you know, going all over India, evangelizing Christianity in a way that really trashed Hinduism. So these people were promoting their ideas in the name of religion, was actually doing a lot of, without modern media, doing a lot of destructive, undermining work against, you know, and Gaudiya Vaishnavism was practically dominant during this time. At least, you know, it's a mixed.
Well, I'm not saying that this will defeat Gaudiya Vaishnavism or that this will defeat Krishna consciousness. Quite the contrary, you know, eventually this movement will be spread to every town and every village. But I wanted to, you know, talk about the general mood of our world today. It is dominated by media and irreligion. And this brainwashes the general populace and makes it more difficult for them to have a wholesome lifestyle because they're being brainwashed by the media and irreligiosity, which is being put forward as something normal. It's being very normalized. Do you agree with that or not? Okay, so next we're gonna talk about the next topic. So the Lord especially descends to appease his devotees who are always harassed by the demoniac. But more so than to kill the demons, because he has many agents who can do that, he descends to appease his devotees. So in the purport of 4.8 Bhagavad Gita, as far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons. But the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demoniac. Always harassed by the demoniac. The demon harasses the devotee, even though the latter may happen to be his kin. Although Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, he was nonetheless persecuted by his father. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kansa, she and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kansa, but both were performed simultaneously. Therefore, it is said here that to deliver the devotee and vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. However, the Sri Krishna Chaitanya avatar, he does not appear to kill demons, but rather to deliver them by his causeless mercy. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the point is also made about he descends to satisfy his devotees. So in Madhya 20, it says that Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees, who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. The Lord says that he incarnates himself in every millennium. This indicates that he also incarnates in the age of Kali, Lord Chaitanya. Incarnation of the age of Kali is Lord Chaitanya, and he spreads the worship of Krishna through the Sankirtan movement. He predicted that this culture of Sankirtan would be broadcast all over the world, from town to town and village to village. So despite the demons attempting to put irreligiosity into the world with the use of media, despite that, the movement of Lord Chaitanya will reach every town and every village. And this avatar does not descend to kill the miscreants, but delivers them by his causeless mercy. Okay, so I'll stop there. Actually, I have one more passage to read. This is from the Krishna Samhita by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and this particular edition was edited by our very own Pundarik Prabhu. Actually, before I get into that, I wanted to see if there are any questions about what we said, or any discussion about what we said so far, and then I'll just finish with reading this, yes, reading this passage.
We know Lord Krishna comes once in the day of Brahma. So during that Dwapara Yuga when he came, it stated that many, I read it in one of the Puranas, it stated that many of the Kshatriyas that were posing as kings, they were actually demons. They were killed by the demigods, but then they took birth on earth as demons, and they were oppressing the citizens during the time of Lord Krishna came. But one other point I was thinking, and sometimes you hear a lot of people would say that Krishna is an incarnation of Vishnu. But it seems like in the other Kali Yugas, because there are many, many more Kali Yugas,
yes,
it seems like he might be coming from Vishnu, that particular Krishna. But this one that came in this Rupa was the original Supreme Lord.
Yes, exactly. And my understanding is that he comes in his original form as the Krishna form, also just once in the day of Brahma. So once in every 1,000 Chatur Yugas, he comes as Krishna. And other Chatur Yugas and other millenniums, he comes in one of his incarnations.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, so thank you for bringing up a startling topic about the effect of irreligious media. And I was just thinking how you mentioned some examples of Krishna conscious use of such media. And it's funny, yesterday I was listening, on YouTube I was doing some household tasks. So I listened to Jamuna Kirtan for a while, but I also listened to an interview with George Harrison from the 90s sometime. And in the course of it, he mentioned to the interviewer that when he wrote My Sweet Lord, His they were talking about the court case, but he said the main reason he wrote the song was to try to figure out a way to put the very well-known Alleluia together with Hare Krishna and kind of slip Krishna consciousness in. And then he said, and since then, because it was like 20 years at least after that hit, he said, now there's so many yoga societies, so many people vegetarian, like that. So, and we have, just within this community, so many devotees that do kirtan and travel to yoga circuits, using entertainment, like that example they read before class at the Polish Woodstock. So many people. It's entertainment.
Yes.
They go there. A lot of them are drunk, but they're
because we want to be entertained.
Name. Right.
It's just sort of within our nature, isn't it?
Yeah, so I was also thinking how the biblical example of David and Goliath, it appeared that the large person would be victorious.
Mm.
But actually, the small little one that didn't look like he had much of a chance ended up winning. So we can take hope from such an example that even though numerically we're quite small, Lord
Thank
Chaitanya's
you.
Potency in the holy name may use that same media back against it.
Thank you. That's a really, really nice point. Yes, it's also a powerful weapon for us. You know, it's a powerful weapon to promote irreligiosity, but it also is a powerful weapon that we can use. And of course, the potency of the holy name is stronger than all those irreligious medias put together, isn't it? Lord Chaitanya is stronger than that. The holy name is stronger than that. That was a very nice point, thank you.
The point that you were making of the prevalence of the negative media, and I'm how much it is actually affecting the raising of our children in this particular day and age.
Yes.
It was not as difficult. You know, like they say, a village raises, or it takes a village to raise a child. But now these kids, especially those who are, you know, it's a tool for babysitting. Young children are becoming
very bad
addicted
for the children,
to exposure to screen time and whatever comes before them. And I just want to say that I was discussing this with one of the young mothers here, and I went online to look for books that would help parents redirect their kids, or let's say deprogram them from that addiction. And a very successful title, are you aware of it, that I gave to Rasamrita? Something like Reprogramming Your Child's Brain.
Yes.
And several parents got together around that book, and they have experienced successful progress in getting their kid unaddicted.
It definitely is, you know, an addiction. It definitely is. There's something very powerful about it. And in my generation, you know, we were definitely like, you know, the MTV had just like come out, and you know, that was like very addictive when you're young. You're very, it is hard to get those images out of your mind. You know, those images like stay in your mind like forever, kind of. So it is very, very powerful, and it is addictive. And that was my point, how today it's like very difficult for young people to not be addicted to media. Very, very difficult. You know, the world has become more impersonal. Personal contact has been diminished, you know, and they are very much taking shelter of this media. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, Heather. Just wait for the mic.
The things that we as devotees have to also be very constantly aware of. I mean, we know, but it's good to be reminded of how insidious the media is being used purposely.
Purposely,
all different types of media to normalize. And
to normalize it, to normalize irreligion. That's what's going on, you know. And you talk about Vedic culture, and then you talk about what the normal, quote-unquote, way of life is today. It's two very different things. And this media has been used to normalize sin, basically, like irreligious activity.
It's very frightening, actually.
It's frightening because it's normal. It's just normal.
It's insidious, you know? How it's done. Right. I mean, they even use animated cartoons.
Absolutely.
What we used to say, to program it.
Absolutely.
And degrade. The things that they call cartoons now, it's like weird messages.
Really weird messages, like sexual messages for children.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you for bringing up such an important topic. That's all around us.
Yes, thank you.
And we have to be aware.
Thank you, Mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe that my belief is that we should be aware of what's going on in the world and what the climate of the world is. And this will help our preaching. So how does this have to do with Bhagavatam? Like this, that's how that has to do with the Bhagavatam. Like we should be aware of what's going on, I don't believe that we should be, quote unquote, like overly into it or, I gotta catch CNN, not anything like that, but we do have to be aware of how, how the demons and how irreligiosity is operating in the world. Not that it's so much a problem for us as much, it might be for some devotees, but it definitely is a huge problem, for non-devotees. So from a preaching perspective, I wanted to address that. Anything else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Chakra.